Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Celebrity Book Club.
Nothing tastes better than the 14th egg of the day. Something's gotta feed the Hulk. Hollywood Hulk, that is.
Hey, Terry, could you come into the computer lounge for a minute? I wanna show you something.
Oh, I bet you do. Some of that new internet porn feeling a little freaky, Linda?
Oh, Terry, keep it in your tiny banana-colored shorts, will ya?
Hey, babe.
Listen, I want to show you some different fabrics I'm looking at for our gorgeous new French-inspired villa we're building in Tampa.
Man, if I didn't love you, I mean, and you had that bod.
All right. You know where my tits are going to look amazing? They're going to look amazing in our brand new 85-meter-long pool. Now, this is just like they have at Versailles. I think it's going to look really, really nice. What do you think?
Versailles, where's that?
That's in France, my dumb, huge 400-pound man who I love.
Hey, Linda, I'm 315 and it's going to stay that way. Having a French-themed house sounds kind of sexy. Voulez-vous avec quoi et moi? That's the saying, right?
Oh, gosh, you're getting me nice and wet. Okay, now what about this nice armoire here? This is Louis XIV. It's a...
This is freaking $100,000. I'm gonna have to slap Mr. T for this 100 times on pay-per-view to pay for this.
Well, honey, I think you can manage it. I mean, don't you want us to live in our perfect dream house? Don't you want me and my tits to be happy?
No, of course, Linda. I'd do anything for you.
Okay, so we'll go with the expensive armoire and the 85-meter pool. And then I'm just going to need a statue. Do you want the little boy pissing or...
I'm not having any little dick statues in my house, okay?
Well, I guess since you're my man and I respect you.
All right, babe, here's my Discover card. Just go wild.
Thanks, hubbykins.
Who's that knocking at the door? It's all your friends, you filthy whore. Your husband's gone and we've got books and a bottle of wine to kill.
It's Hollywood.
It's books.
It's gossip.
I'm shook.
It's memoirs.
It's martinis.
It's Studio 54.
It's Bellini. Celebrity Book Club. Come read it while it's hot. Celebrity Book Club. Tell your secrets, we won't talk. Celebrity Book Club. No boys are allowed. Celebrity Book Club. Club.
Buzz me in, I brought the Cuervo.
Hey, best friend!
Ready for world domination this episode!
Please welcome to the ring!
Steven the Newton, the Rock!
Steven the Newton, the Rock.
I'm riffing here, look.
Please welcome to the stage, Lily, all the way from... The
Steven, all the way from his little bitch ass apartment in Ridgewood. He's feeling crazy because he's been lifting so much at Blink with other gay guys.
All the way from the homeless section of the YMCA in Ditmas Park, it's Lily the Meatball Marotta.
We're doing Hulk Hogan today. Yesterday, listening to the audiobook of this while lifting weights, I mean,
did you feel
it was
so
legendary?
Inspired?
Yeah, it was super inspired.
What I was obsessed with about this book, which again, just sort of situate our listeners, we read Hulk Hogan's book, Hollywood Hulk Hogan, which is sort of one of his wrestling names. Which is, well, what if this book is from like 02 or something?
Yeah, 2003. It's really before the drama. I mean, there's been a lot
there's
of drama.
There's been quite a bit of drama, but yeah, certainly before what many of us know him for. I guess, well, people knew him before then, but
I knew him as, you know, a yes, been in training.
Before he took down my former employer, Gawker, for the first time in a $100 million lawsuit funded by Peter Thiel.
But yeah, we usually do know him as like the most famous wrestler to have ever lived.
And with his handlebar mustache. But this heavily abridged audiobook that we listen to on
Beep, we love iHeartRadio.
I was obsessed with it because there's so much like sound design. There's like, it starts with, there's like awesome rock music playing. And then even like when he's describing like being in the ring at the beginning, there's like sounds
it's
of cheering.
And then it's like, ah!
And I was like, wow, I'm really there.
So Hulk Hogan, actually, many people don't know, started out as a rock musician before moving to wrestling in his youth in Tampa, Florida. I know we said Tampa jokes are hacky on our last episode.
I agree, and they are the key soul of like cities now.
But he is the most Tampa person alive.
Yeah, he is very Tampa.
He's pretty Florida.
You know, Tampa, it's a city of dreams. It's a city of like sex. It's a city of lower IQs. The I-4 corridor between Orlando and Tampa, it's all like billboards for like Christianity and strippers.
And wrestling, which is a true art and a fictional, amazing universe filled with creatives who work for Vince McMahon, one of the more evil people probably living.
You think because he's made so much money off of people injuring themselves?
Well, just like every day there's like a new article about him like raping people.
Right.
Bella Twins are like kind of like staying silent about it.
I mean, obviously it's like such an insane mafia situation
going on over there. I've always like had a dream that of working for WWF as a writer. So if anyone's listening, this is kind of my audition.
And they're
tape.
Headquartered in Stamford, right?
They're in Stamford. That's why, because like every time when, you know, I would drive home to Boston, you pass the huge glass WWF building.
Yeah.
And I was like, someday.
Someday I'll be padding around
my Stamford cubicle. WWF.
And like, I got it. I got the best idea.
Boy, just back to the sound design for a second. So Hulk Hogan, he like started out like playing like in bands. And one of those bands he had played in was called The Ruckus. But there's the song that plays in the audiobook that is clearly like written for the audiobook. That's just like trying to be like ZZ Top-esque. And it's like, I'm an American man. It's fully so, South Park. It's just being like, red,
rock,
white, and blue. American man. Red, white, and blue blood in my American veins. Like, we're going to kick some ass.
It's like, so was his music being A, that like patriotic, B, that kind of like, where I thought he was like a little bit more like metal messy.
Yeah. So his first band, The Ruckus.
And he was in high school at this time.
Yeah. I tried to find some demo tapes on YouTube from The Ruckus. Couldn't find any. I don't know if they really made it.
Yeah. We got to unearth those.
But kind of crazy about him being from Florida, actually, his mother was like, I forget what his mother did, but his dad literally was like a pipe fitter in Panama, Panama Canal.
His parents met in the Panama Canal.
How iconic is that?
This is crazy. Where John McCain was born, by the way.
To an American man.
Technically on American soil, which I've always found to be a little bit dubious. But what a great, it's like, of course you're destined to be like just a singularly American figure if your parents meet in the Panama Canal zone. You know,
you're this importing exporter.
A feat of engineering that I visited and is gorgeous, yeah. And I recommend it to anyone if you like big ships and you're autistic like me.
If your lover was a cis woman, I feel like you would like die to like conceive in the Panama Canal.
Oh my God, for sure.
But actually, you practice like Sodom and Gomorrah and you are a homosexual man. You cannot conceive in the Panama Canal.
Yeah, I practiced sodomy in the Panama Canal. But his mom is Panamanian or part Panamanian, and his dad is
Italian.
Full-blooded Italian. And which is why he's so tan, as he reveals later in the book. Yeah.
He's like, everyone was like, hey, Hulk, do you go to spray tanning? Hell no. Do you lay out on the beach? No. I'm full-blooded Italian Panamanian.
Or as he says often in the book, hell no, brother.
Oh, yeah, wait.
Every other word is, hell no, brother. So, okay, brother, come okay, on, brother.
It was fully also gender-affirming for him to be calling the reader brother, because every second he's like, come on, brother. So here's what we did, brother.
No, I do like that, yeah, it's like, like when he's talking about how his wife didn't want to move to Minnesota, he's like, oh, and she made it tough on me, brother. This idea, the camaraderie with the reader who is assumed to be male.
Yes.
I enjoyed that. I like that, you know, when the writer brings the reader in a little bit more aggressively.
Yeah, and it's very wrestling culture, well, one, to be male, but also to like, to bring you in, because it's always like you're talking to the audience, like in these big, like, loud ways, like, you know, you get into the ring and you're just like already being like, I'm gonna take this, and you want people on your side. So he's like bringing us in his side, being like, can you believe Vince McMahon said that to me, brother? Well, that's when the WCW went out of business.
That's a really good point. I think so much of wrestling, you know, we talk about kayfabe a lot, which is a word he does not use in this book.
No.
But which we learned in the Bella Twins book.
Yeah.
I forgot we've done a wrestler before.
Well, we're doing the two generations, because it's like, yeah. Hulk Hogan
is the 90s era.
I mean, 80s, kind of, he came 80s, up 90s, with like, yeah. WWF like came about.
Yeah, he kind of invented the WWF.
And I feel like now everyone knows, like, quote unquote, it's fake.
Right. But back then people really didn't know. I don't even remember, I think in the 90s, like having conversations with other young kids in the playground a little bit, right. But just like, yeah, like, is it real or is it fake?
And it's like always like this kid in like a mushroom cut and like a huge Triple H t-shirt, yeah. Being like, no, it's not fake.
Yeah. And he has so many Hulk Hogan posters and he doesn't want to admit the truth. And of course, I think what's funny in the book is like, he's very open about how it's fake, obviously. And it's all about creating the scenes and, you know, writing these storylines and enacting them. But you're right that like, there is so much acting involved and like a certain kind of acting, not just being like, oh, I'm upset.
I'm
or,
the mean
or
one.
Or I'm mean or I'm smart or I'm from Hollywood, which yeah. was his character for a while when he became a heel, which is the term for a villain. It's like, yeah, there's so much of this bringing the audience onto your side, whether you're the villain or the hero.
And he does.
And kind of mugging for the audience.
And a lot of like, you know.
And that kind of affirmation.
That bait and switch.
But I do think that kind of the saying the brother repeatedly is this way of like,
yeah.
constantly acknowledging the audience, affirming them, bringing them in.
It's very cult-like. It's like all of yes. them have their sayings, like The Rock, can you smell what The Rock is cooking?
Mm.
Stone Cold is, can I get like a hell yeah? I guess Hulk's thing is saying just brother.
Stone Cold was later. Like, Stone Cold was more Y2K.
Yeah.
And he was coming up when Hulk Hogan was kind of like, you know,
was almost on the out, and they were like ready to write him out. And
then he has this like comeback that he describes. And
the way the book is framed is like the beginning and end kind of this like transition, where it's like it ends kind of beautifully with like him wrestling The Rock, who was like the yeah. new star. And he's like, they wanted The Rock to win, but I had to like look like I was going to win, but then lose. So my job was to get people on the Rock side.
Even though he was the villain at this point, he was such a storied figure within wrestling. The fans watching the show loved Hulk, and they only wanted him to be the Rock, and they hated when the Rock like took him down at all. But he says the Rock was so good at acting and was making the fight like so intense and looked like he was really struggling against the Hulk and was really earning his hits against the Hulk, that people started to come around. They stopped booing. They started liking him. What I found interesting about that section was the way he describes it. it's almost as if he stops believing that it's fake.
Yeah.
I was a little bit like, babe, remember this was all, you wrote all this. Remember this was all staged. Remember this all happened. He was like, somehow we managed to do it. Anyone else would have given up, but we managed to keep the fight going. And I didn't think I could take it. And it's like, this was literally all choreographed in advance.
That is the thing about Hulk Hogan's IQ. And like, it's just like, throughout this book, he's talking, he's just like saying these things. And it's like, I just do think he is getting so lost in and like so method, if you will,
yeah,
that he is like, whoa, what, they're cheering for me?
Yeah.
He's also doing this thing that's very like humble girl, where he's like, and when we got to like the United Center Arena in Chicago, and actually the entire stadium was cheering for me, like I couldn't believe it, in like the late 90s. And it's like, well, yeah, you're like,
and he's being so Taylor Swift. But then he's not being humble when he's like, I invented Hulkamania.
Right.
And the entire pressure of the entire World Wrestling Federation was sitting squarely on one guy's shoulders. My shoulders. You're like, we get it, Hulk.
You invented it. The craziest thing also he says about The Rock at the end, spoiler alert, is he's like, I really wanted The Rock to win because he was starring. He was the first ever wrestler, I don't know if that's true, to star in a movie. And he was like, it was the Scorpion King's opening weekend and I was not going to let him down.
I really love that. He was yeah, like, we need this cross promotion yeah, to hit, mama. We like, need asses in seats. A rising tide lift all boats.
It's true. And like, I'm doing this for all wrestlers. Like, yeah. And I will not let the Scorpion King numbers fail.
I think that's true because I think Sly and Arnold were bodybuilders.
Yeah.
Very different than, I mean, like, to the public, kind of similar to wrestling. And obviously, the wrestlers are also bodybuilders because they are making their bodies gigantic through
gigantic and
steroid
huge
use.
And
but
I was,
they're listed as athletes.
No. And so, to kind of go back for a second, so Hulk is like a chubby kid.
He says, he has the quote, I ran like I was pulling a piano. Oh, I looked like a Goodyear blimp.
Oh, and then he's like, not only did guys not pick me for the teams, but what girl wants to dance with a blimp? So then, you know, he starts playing in bands. He starts working on the gym.
And then, because he's fat, what sport does he have to do? Bowling. And he was like, somehow I was good at bowling. And so he's hanging out with the bowling team while he's doing, like, his indie rock band in Greater Tampa. And
it's also funny referring to his 70s, like, metal band as, like, indie rock. But, like, it was for that time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he's Vampire Weekend.
Yeah, but his Sufjan Stevens-ass band.
And then he's, like, working at the gym. And I'm sure it's, like, very a bodybuilder gym. And it's, like, all guys and they're all, like, they're all sweating. And
so the little tank tops and
little tank tops. And there's like, do you think it's like Donna Summer's playing like really tinnily from like a boombox in the corner? Like,
okay, well, I just saw the Kristen Stewart lesbian movie, Love Lies Bleeding. That whole movie is about her working at her creepy dad's gym in the 80s. And it's all bodybuilders. And she literally is like pressing play on like a tinny, totally 80s boombox, and then like smoking cigarettes and like just like being a fucking dyke and being like,
fuck,
guys, gym's closing.
She's obsessed with being an assistant. She's always like an assistant or like a PA or something in a movie.
And someone's like, is this your gym? She's like, that's fucking my dad's. I hate him. She is obsessed with being an assistant.
Like in that movie, Personal Shopper, in Clouds of Sils Maria. Like she's always
Spencer in a way where she plays Princess Diana, technically. Assistant.
Yeah, she's assisting.
I'll say this, my critique of this movie, I wish that movie was just about Kristen Stewart managing the gym in Tampa that Hulk Hogan was building at, rather than the like messy mystery that it was.
Oh, it's like a murder mystery?
Yeah, it's just like her bodybuilder girlfriend kills her sister's abusive husband, but her father is running guns.
Okay. It sounds a little convoluted. They're trying to do too much.
No, they were really trying to do too much. And I'm like, what if we just made it simple? You're a lesbian.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan is there.
You know, this is what I always tell young screenwriters. You know, you don't need that much plot if you have good characters.
That is so true, because those characters were not built. The character was just like, she is Shane, but it's the Southwest.
Yeah.
And it's the 80s.
She's a hot, moody, brooding dyke.
Celebrity Book Club. Rhythm is a dance.
Hey, New Yorkers, we're coming to your town where we already live, and we're doing a live show on June 5th at the Bowery Ballroom. It is going to be so much fun. Get your summer started right with some martinis and your best friends. We'll be joined by Sarah Sherman of SNL. Don't, like, be on your deathbed and be like, fuck, I should have done that. Just, the tickets are on sale now. They're in our bio. Buy them. They're only $30, which is free.
It was that summer. That summer, I started using Cozy Earth. Cozy Earth makes elevated loungewear and amazing, luxurious, soft bedding that surpasses even the finest hotel sheets for a restful night's sleep on your travels or at home. I love Cozy Earth so much that I got it as a present for my spouse. And the things that happened on that bed, you wouldn't believe it. I got their joggers, and oh my God, it almost feels like you're nude, better than nude. It feels like you're swimming in the most luxurious ocean. So stay cool and comfy during long flights with Cozy Earth's temperature-regulating bamboo joggers and pullover crew, adding a touch of style to your travel ensemble. Discover your next destination for ultimate comfort at Cozy Earth. Visit CozyEarth.com and use our code CBC at checkout to get 35% off. And let them know we sent you after checkout, okay?
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So in Hulk, when he gets into the steroid game,
he says he starts taking steroids in 1975. And then when like the steroid scandal hits the WWE in like the 90s, they like try to take him and Vince McMahon down.
And he's just like, and it was bad on our relationship. And we didn't talk for a while because he thought that I was collaborating with the feds, but they didn't have anything on me. Like, he's kind of just shouting the entire book and like kind of realizing everything for the first time as he's saying it.
Yeah. And he's like, wait, I am mad.
But he's very like, yeah, we were all doing it. I don't think anything was wrong. People told me I'd take it and I'd get bigger. And man, did I want to get bigger.
Here's my thing about steroids and professional sports.
Speak on it, girl.
If everyone's doing it, what's the problem?
Yeah. It's like, this has always been this thing in sports. Then there's always this scandal around
it. Right, and they get suspended and fired and everyone's getting piss tested.
Why don't you just make it mandatory for everybody?
Literally, I'm just like, with the wrestlers, they're all like jacked up.
Yeah.
On the steroids. So it's like, well, why don't you just be like, yeah, they're all on steroids. Like, up to you if you guys want to do that or not.
I heard some of the teens at my gym the other day, which, by the way, I do feel like this is something that didn't happen in the
90s. Wait, that teens go to the gym?
That teens go to the gym.
There's so many teens at my gym, and they're all just, like, literally on their phones weightlifting. And I'm like, sorry, not to be fully Gen X. Play outside.
Literally.
Like, this is a boring place for us adults.
I just also think it's there's something to, like, hustle culture about it where it's
yes.
like, you're 13, you shouldn't have leg day.
No. It's sad. Like,
you don't need to be, like, getting into peak performance.
Or I see, like, 15-year-old girls there with their moms on the elliptical.
With their moms?
Yeah, or...
It's so eating disorder coded.
No, it's so eating disorder and sad, and I'm just like... I feel like you did sports back in the day or you like didn't exercise and like who cares and like you were like a gym sucks. But to be so like although, leg day. And,
I mean
like,
leg day, it's so weird. It's all these fucking teens. And they're all like joshing each other and like whatever. And they're all so like narcissistic. They're all taking photos. And it's just funny how physical, what a sight of homoeroticism in the locker room as it always has been. But like how much male preening there is going on. But I heard these guys the other day talking. They were just like, yeah, man, like, do you want to get on testosterone? And they were like talking about taking tea. And they were like, yeah, like, it'll make your muscles big, but your balls are going to shrink. And I was like, okay, I have heard that you, I don't know if it's tea or if it's steroids or it's both. Because I do know, like, gay guys now are, like, taking testosterone,
okay.
Which is maybe, like, more modern than, like, old school 80s steroids where you're being so Barry Bonds. But, like.
Yeah. Wow. The Barry Bonds scandal. Also, by the way, it was so 90s to be caught taking steroids, but also like not paying your taxes. Those always like came together. Because like Barry Bonds didn't pay his taxes, then Mark McGuire like came.
And like Wesley Snipes didn't pay his taxes.
Very 90s. Happy taxes.
90s was about no taxes. Yes, steroids. Okay, but what's the steroid use at your gym looking like? Are guys being like jacked to a unnatural degree?
Absolutely not. No, the why is like. It's so just like middle-aged Jewish man and then like some kind of like nerdy Park Slope guys. So some people are jacked, but it doesn't seem in an unnatural way. But they're like teens that I bet maybe some of them play with. The teens are the most buff.
I just think if the teens, if they're talking about drug use casually and potentially taking it, it seems like it's in the ether. Like everyone's doing it.
The teens are taking
it. And there's definitely some bodies that are... too wide where the shoulders are too broad and you're like this is
right. Well, and so Hulk talks about when he was 3 like 30 or 315 when he was on steroids and then he's like now I'm like 285 or like 250.
I mean, this guy was fucking huge.
He was huge, but I will say I felt watching some epic 80s Hulk matches, I think he's less huge than like the guys today. I feel like everything, well, except for Andre the Giant.
When he talks about picking up Andre the Giant and he was like, and I want to give people a fight they'll never forget. I'm going to body slam Andre the Giant. That scene was actually incredibly homoerotic when he's describing.
He goes, I came up to his crotch.
He was like, his crotch came up to my high chest. And then he's talking about sliding his arm underneath through the legs of Andre the Giant. And you're just like, damn, this is so erotic.
And Google this match if you have not.
How big is Andre the Giant, do you think?
So I think Andre the Giant is like 7 feet.
And you think he's got an elephant trunk on there?
I actually think it's not. I feel like he's so huge. Proportionally, it just doesn't add up because like nothing can.
And then it actually kind of looks small in relation to the rest of them.
So it might surprise you, and maybe we said this on our wrestling episode like 700 years ago, that Steven and I used to go to see Ring of Honor, which is basically like training ground for WWF. It's like a league that's like semi-professional.
No, I love this in the book when he talks about when he was first starting wrestling in Tampa, going to the Armory, where we literally went to go see Ring of Honor.
in the greater Boston area. We went to many shows.
Many shows that were like VFW halls, armories.
And it's basically, yeah, it's a feeder to the WWE/F.
Right, because it still is like characters and...
And I remember there was that guy CM Punk. He's probably a pro now. Maybe he's even retired.
CM Punk is retired now.
But did he go pro?
Yeah, he went pro and he was like...
I had such a crush on him.
He was huge in like the 2010s.
In the Northeast region.
Well, yeah. And so also they talk about a lot of like the wrestling territories. And this is when like WWF...
But what I loved about going to those things was a lot of what I like about this book is like the sense of camaraderie.
Yes.
And even just going for the first time, like there's all this lore, there's all this narrative.
It's really fun because it's like, it is a play. It's like a badass, fun play you are watching with like lots of music.
Where you're rooting for the characters and all
you
the characters have merch. And
yes.
Like...
Well, wait, and I want to talk about how like, I think wrestling, like besides like rock music is like the biggest creator of merch,
like the biggest contributor to global warming via
like,
t-shirt
yeah, like
production,
like global warming merch, like music, and then like wrestling
podcasting.
Wrestling walked so podcasting could run. Yeah. With merch, like wrestling merch was like the biggest thing in the 90s, like 80s. Like I remember with my cousin, like us with a Hulk Hogan stretch doll.
Oh, like Stretch Armstrong.
Stretch Armstrong. I mean, you like pull it and it gets like big, and it's like there was a million t-shirts. Oh, and so Hulk Hogan, he said he made more money, which is maybe why people get into wrestling, more money on t-shirts at one point than he did.
Yeah, because he's getting a paltry fee. He's getting a couple grand for a show, but he is selling t-shirts like hotcakes out of the back of his car.
Back of his car, and he's going back to the mall to get them like printed.
Yeah.
Which is insane. And he says,
support your local
mall printer.
Mall t-shirt printer.
Boy, just back to the camaraderie and wrestling and like something about like boy culture. Wrestling is kind of, it's not for the popular boys. Like there is something like metal about it. Like
it's also like nerdy because of the yeah. lore aspect of it, and so it like requires like memorizing all this stuff. I mean, I guess like anything has that. Like baseball can also be nerd out about baseball.
True, but I just feel like the wrestling, like it does bring like a bigger kind of like community that you can be a little more like badass. I'm in my like all black, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin t-shirt. Maybe yeah. I'm like a little chubby. Like it lets you kind of get into the comic book like lore of all these guys, where it's like basketball and baseball. I mean, it's stats and like watching it.
It is stats. And I think that there is something more, if you will,
and there's
like progressive and communitarian about the wrestling world. It's less like just a rote like display of performance and just like, well, these people are the best and this team is the best. Like,
right.
You know, growing up, it was like in the 90s, it was always just like the Yankees are the best team and they have the best people. And there's something more like fascistic about that almost versus wrestling, which is more like, we know it's a play and theater is actually quite gay.
I mean, also, let's just talk about actually wrestling. It's sex.
It is quite sexual. A lot of men.
It's a lot of men
burying
like,
their faces in other men's crotches.
My girlfriend and I, we were at a local bar the other day, Shenanigans. And there was MMA on, and we were just kind of being so like laughing at it because they were just like straight up like humping each other and being so just like my face literally burying in dick. And then the bartender like looked at us and he thought we were being like girls who were like offended by like fighting. He was like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, do you want me to, and he was wearing a wrestling t-shirt and he was like, do you want me to change it?
Do you want me to change my t-shirt?
No, the TV.
Oh, God.
Because he thought we were
like... How fucking cucked can you be?
No, he thought we were like being offended by the like MMA. And we were like, oh, no, like we're just like laughing because like, it looks like they're having sex. And he like did not laugh. Then he was being so serious, guy who's just like, that's just what fighting is. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. It's not sexual at all.
So your two options were either like be offended because it's too violent,
yeah, or
not understand it because you're
like
stupid girls. Well, you were kind of like making fun of his culture.
I was, and it's like here I was trying to fit in at the divey Irish bar, and then yeah. I was just being like, this is ridiculous.
I mean, MMA is a whole other thing that we don't have time to
get
into.
We don't have
today.
Time for it. I did just want to say one thing about MMA is that like I think MMA came about as a rejection of the Vince McMahon WWE like culture.
Yes, of it being too fake.
Literally, it being too fake.
Frankly, too fun.
Yeah, they were like, oh, no, we need to go back to actually being like a little more like classic toxic masculinity.
Yeah, where it's just like you're doing a mix of like karate and taekwondo.
And Muay Thai.
And Muay Thai and boxing.
And it's like actually real fighting, not just like, you know, these fake moves. But they are all real moves. Like when Hulk Hogan describes, like when he first realized it was fake, he was like, so actually he like taught me how to like hook my arm around his ear, pull it this way to the side, touch this part of his neck, then he would pass out for 5 minutes.
Oh, right. And so it's like he's actually learning ways to not hurt your opponent and to make it look like you are. But still, when they're doing flips and body slamming each other and all this other shit, it's like, that's not easy stuff to do. And it's very taxing on the body. I loved early on when he's talking about the other wrestlers. He's just like, you got Ox Baker, Pak Song Man, the Giant Korean, the Missouri Mauler, the Iron Sheik.
Like, wait, that's what I said. We met Ox Baker at Ring of Honor.
Oh, and he also had like kind of an insane goatee.
Yeah, and looked like he was like severely like possibly mentally damaged by that point that we met him, which is too bad. And maybe that was before some kind of safety features. But so at this Ring of Honor, like Ox Baker was there, and I think he was like a 70s, 60s wrestling legend. And he is like this huge man, bald, handlebar mustache, weighed, I don't know, 300 to 400 pounds. And I remember I got merch. I got a t-shirt with him signed it. And then I got some 8x10 that I think I still have.
Oh, I've seen it in your house. Yeah. And you felt like you were part of the club.
Part of the club, you know?
A tidbit I love from this was how he got the name Hulk Hogan. He got the name Hulk because he was on a TV show with Lou Ferrigno, who was playing the Hulk, the Incredible Hulk.
And he was like, whoa.
And he was like, I had the upper hand. Lou Ferrigno had a speech impediment, so he had trouble talking. And I said, I'm the real Hulk because I was bigger than him. I was tipping the scales at 315. And then he got Hogan because like Vince McMahon or whatever was like, well, yeah, we already have, we have an Italian, we have Bruno Sammartino, we have a Native American, we have Chief J. Strongboat, we have a Polish, we have Ivan Putski, we have a Puerto Rican, we got Paige Morales. We don't have anyone to represent the Irish block.
Which I know, that was upset. He was like, fuck, we need an Irish wrestler. You're going to be our... And he's like, so I'm literally not Irish.
He's like, I'm Italian Panamanian.
I love Irish passing.
I do just like, so you're now going to permanently represent the Irish. It's like, I don't know if the Irish people ever felt represented by Hulk Hogan.
No, as someone, you know, who's famously Irish-Italian, I was never like, oh, Hulk Hogan is my...
is my people.
I think that was before he took on the full... Hollywood, like Hulkamania was invented and full like his yellow red colors that he made, which he said, quote unquote, were inspired by the colors of McDonald's.
I tried that. He was like, shout out to McDonald's. You guys did it first.
Yeah, he's like, McDonald's is a big successful chain. So yeah, those are powerful colors, brother. So I'm going to make my colors red and yellow, brother.
And you know what? They are very bright colors. They're very saturated. Also, the cover of the book, he's wearing two boas. This is what I'm saying. It's like wrestling is so gay and fun.
Yeah, it's fun. It's like, and Hulk
it's men and boas.
Whole thing was, I mean, this is Hulk stuff, but it's that his shirt would always like rip in the back because he was the Incredible like Hulk. But it's like, that's also just a top at Rainbow. Yeah. To have like little
yeah,
tiny
to have all of the little holes in the back. Yes. It's very Rainbow.
He's in like a red boa, little shorts, but it's like, it doesn't matter because you're like, well, I'm 300 pounds, so... that's fine. I do want to just, like, talk about his, like, marriage and Gawker, like...
Oh, God, we haven't even got into that. I know. And also the thing about the mansion in the south of France. And Richard Belzer from Law & Order.
Okay, so this is an insane story that... probably, like, the weirdest story in the book is Vince McMahon, head of WWF, is like, you and Mr. T need to go do this, like, random show, and it's called Hot Properties.
And he gets a call from Linda McMahon, and she's just like... I've got 50 kids in wheelchairs. You need to go to Richard Belzer's Hot Properties in like Sarasota, and you need to go say hi to the 50 kids in wheelchairs.
So they like do this show.
Him with, and Mr. T.
With Richard Belzer. And like.
And when we say Richard Belzer, we mean literally the guy from SVU, like that
right,
actor.
Who I guess had like a local Florida cable access show called Hot Properties.
Which was not a real estate show, it sounds like.
No.
And apparently the 50 kids in wheelchairs was a myth. It was literally just a ruse yeah. to get Mr. T and Hulk Hogan to show up at the TV station.
Another subplot of this book is like Mr. T really doubting himself for wrestling and spiraling a lot and always yeah. like leaving practice because he can't handle it. And Hulk being like, Mr. T, brother, come on.
No, I mean, the two of them with all eight of their brain cells, it sounds so funny. And like, he's always describing, it's like, Mr. T was mad. He wasn't talking. He was just yanking on that parking meter, yeah. like describing some large object that Mr. T carries around and like works out with in some way.
Mr. T is just being like, oh, I pity the fool who has to go to Richard Belzer's
and then like
show.
When and like whenever Mr. T does talk, he literally is just saying, I pity the fool, and is just like getting mad and being like, no, you fools, you're not gonna let me not get into the garden with my entourage. Like, and then is yanking on his meter, and Hulk's like, come on, man, come on, brother.
Come on, brother. And Hulk is being like, actually a little more being like, and you know what? Turned out Mr. T was actually just scared of performing at Madison Square Garden. And that's why
he sees the vulnerability in yes. big strong men.
Male friendship. Okay, so they go to this Richard Belzer show. Richard Belzer's like, come on, do a move on me. And Hulk is like, I don't know, like, should I? And then he does, and like Richard Belzer's like, that's fine, tricks them and sues Vince McMahon and Hulk.
Yeah, and let's just say he passes out, he yes. drops him from the hold, he slams his head on the floor and is bleeding. And then he's like, oh, but that was great, I loved it. And then sues them for $5 million.
Then Richard Belzer wins.
Vince McMahon and
Hulk.
Like, and Hulk pay him $5 million.
So Richard Belzer kind of tricked Hulk into like fucking him up.
So during this time, Terry Malaya is his real name.
Yeah, Hulk Terry Hogan. Balea.
Balea. His first wife, Linda, she's building her dream house in Florida based on a French chateau.
And she traveled to France to do tons of research on French chateaus. And, you know, it's costing a lot.
Yeah.
But he's like, you know, happy wife, happy life.
And as she's doing her research, she stumbles upon an article that mentions Richard Belzer and his new chateau in the south of France that he won with the lawsuit money and named Shea Hogan.
Like, literally naming it Shea Hogan, just being like, so fuck rude. You. It's so rude. And it's like, he actually got the chateau in France, and she's just doing a cheesy-ass recreation in Tampa.
Yeah.
Which I did watch The Cribs from 05, and it's pretty epic.
Okay, wait, save it for
How Does She Live.
Okay, let's briefly get into
Gawker. The Gawker scandal is just not covered in this book because this book ended in 2003. It was before he was divorced from Linda Hogan. It was before his daughter was talking to him. And it was before a sex tape of him fucking his best friend who was named like Bubba Gump Love.
Right. His best friend's like wife. And it was apparently a rival DJ that like to Bubba Gump Love, who was like a Tampa area DJ, and a rival DJ like released the tape to Gawker to like make him look bad.
You know, and basically Hulk Hogan was Peter Thiel's puppet to bring down.
Yeah, because Peter Thiel had an axe to grind with Gawker because Nick Denton, Gawker founder, had like called him out for being gay. Because back at the time in like the 2009s era, Gawker was like very outing people, and they were always just being like, everyone knows Anderson Cooper is gay.
And blind item, Peter, this PayPal co-founder.
And
is...
it's like everyone did know Anderson Cooper was gay, and like they were like bold and brash for doing that. And you know, to this day, people will be like, you know, like that hasn't aged well. That was wrong of them. But I'm kind of just like, I think it's fine that they did that.
Outing Anderson Cooper, I have no problem with that.
I'm
personally.
Just like, especially he's people fine. Like Thiel and Cooper, like they're pretty big public figures and everyone does know. It's kind of okay to like turn the gossip into news in that context.
Right. And now it's so, you know, you really are not supposed to out people. And the media really respects some folk in the glass closet.
They are obsessed with the amount of respect
yeah.
for the people in the glass closet. Where it's like they still won't call Lindsey Graham gay or whatever. And it's very just like, what?
And it's like, why? We know. Yet Hulk Hogan?
Yeah, so it's like, so Peter Thiel used Hulk Hogan as a puppet. I mean, do you think Hulk A knows that Peter Thiel was using him?
B, do you think he even cared?
That's why I think Hulk Hogan was so in his own like Hulkamania world that he's like, I can't believe Bubba Gump, the DJ, did this to me.
He's thinking very locally.
More locally in the greater Clearwater area. And he's like, I know what I did was super stupid. And, you know, I saw this interview with Linda Hogan and just being like, I just think it's despicable that he won money for just like fucking Heather.
Period.
Literally, period. And then she went on to like date a 19-year-old.
Okay, glass houses.
Mama.
Go off, cougar. Wait, did you ever watch the video?
No.
It's very like night vision.
I was guessing. Is it like?
It's a lot of like him like fucking her for like 20 seconds and like getting up and like walking away and coming back and like talking.
Getting water.
Yeah. His dick is not big per se, which is interesting, which is maybe why he would not. But again, he is big, so it's probably not going to look huge in comparison.
I could also see going on and off
steroids.
The steroids
can really shrink the equipment, honey. Apparently, it's only supposed to affect your balls, but. The whole thing comes
also with the diet, it's like, right, he's eating what, like 40 eggs and like 7 hamburgers, doing the steroids, going off the steroids.
It's going to wreak havoc.
It's going to wreak havoc on the D. And it's just kind of wild that it's like he never read Gawker. He probably
I cannot imagine him surfing into Gawker.com.
And I think he saw it as just probably like another one of these tabloid websites. Not an amazing like websites for like gay guys and like girls to have columns.
Right. It's just a fun website for us to have columns. Like, don't worry about it, babe.
And he got his millions and Gawker went and then it came back.
It came back and then ultimately it went again.
Yeah.
When another mercurial billionaire decided he was done with it.
Yeah, it's also funny thinking about Hulk, like, reading the new Gawker. Being like, that damn site is up, brother.
Well, I'll give them a shot. They can make it interesting.
He's, like, reading a review of The Guest by Emma Klein. Being like, brother,
this book sounds like a real trip. If I have time, I'll read it on my vacation.
You know, and now Hulk, I'd be curious to see Hollywood Hulk Part 2, his memoir of the case, his daughter not speaking to him.
And I would like to also have it be a heavily abridged 2-hour audiobook with plenty of sound effects. Celebrity Book Club.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season 1, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
She's breathing right now? Yes, she's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
we're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry though, he's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Please welcome to the stage, Segments!
How does she live?
What does she wear?
What does she eat?
What does she eat? Protein, protein, protein.
Protein, protein, protein. Eggs. Okay, I had to do some cheating on this because the stuff was too funny. He said what he used to eat. 3 Miller Lights before a match and 14 Miller Lights after a match.
Stop.
He was like, probably
17 Miller Lights in an evening?
And then in the cribs, he pulls out the visual, almost makes me want to vomit, just a Ziploc with literally 40 hard-boiled eggs.
That's the grossest thing ever.
But now I heard...
So gas station. He could really fulfill all his needs at a gas station.
No, he said he was gas station. They were like... He used to eat, you know, just burgers, no bun, but from like Denny's or IHOP.
Okay.
Because it was just about the protein.
The classic Tyra Banks strategy.
Have burger, a burger without the bun.
Her advice to Kenya, if you guys yes. might have remember from Cycle. What was that,
and
four?
I'm always like thinking that, being like, Lily, you could just have the burger
without the bun. Okay, let's head to Corner Bistro. I want to see you order that.
But
you
know,
can I admit something? I ordered two burgers at Julius 2 nights ago.
Okay, thank you for sharing that.
I'm fucking disgusting. I'm a nasty
two
burger, lesbian.
And, like, you're literally feral and like you're bulking for like WWF. Wait, question. Was it two at once?
No, I ordered one. I was like, I need another one. It was partially also because I didn't specify... My like queer server didn't ask where I wanted it cooked. And so like they brought me one that was like insanely well done. And I was kind of like, I wouldn't like. So I asked for rare and basically got it like medium. So always ask for rare.
I usually love the Julius burger. It's not as good as it used to be.
It's not. I think like different chefs there. They used to have like other.
They used to have one chef that was like an angry guy on a griddle.
Yeah.
And now it's like
he
queer.
Knew it was up.
There's queerdos behind
it's
there.
Too many tender queers.
That are just being like. Mm.
The queers are tender. The meat is not.
No.
All right. But we love you, Julius.
We love you, Julius.
Oh, so he's eating gas station eggs.
But now, anyway, whatever. I cheated. Now I saw a thing of what's in his fridge, and he's like addicted to Chameleon cold brew.
Is that some brand I've never heard of?
It's just like that cold brew that's sold at like every fancy deli.
Not like O'Grady's.
No,
like
but
it's always...
like that.
Okay.
It's next to O'Grady's. There's like the,
is it
it's
in,
the
is
bear.
Is it in like a big box with like a spigot, or is it in like a jar?
It's like jar, and there's always like a bear on the logo.
Okay. It sounds very O'Grady's.
And he's very just like Halo Top, Oatly ice cream.
Okay. Wow. Daily Harvest to the boots.
Well, it's because he has like a third wife that's 47 and so like aloe, and now he's just being like chicken, organic,
when,
sober.
When you pick up your Hilaria Baldwin wife, like it's Halo Top
it's
o'clock. Totally,
yeah. She's like, in this video, he was like, brother, this is badass. And like holding up some like plant-based chocolate bar.
Damn. All right. If you say so.
If you say so, brother.
If you say so, brother. If that makes you feel like a man, what does he wear?
I mean,
to fit into clothes, I'm sure.
Yeah, he's always in like a tight Hulk t-shirt and like cross and shorts.
Yeah, not wearing a ton of clothing. We don't have to when you're in Florida.
Yeah, it's like board shorts, tight Hulkamania shirt, or like.
Is he still doing the handlebars?
Yeah, I think so.
And he's
still...
probably, do you think he's like dyeing his hair at home in their like triple sink bathroom?
Right, bleach blonde, or is he letting it go like white? I think, he looks so crazy now. It's white beard, and then like white mustache, and then like kind of like different color beard growing in.
Okay.
Looking a little more like devilish in this way.
Interesting. I mean, that does happen. Those of us with facial experience, some parts get white more than others.
Which one? I think he's like dyeing the mustache.
Oh, he's specifically dyeing the mustache.
Yeah, to keep it like blonde and Hulk.
Because the mustache is like Hulk, but the rest is kind of like Terry.
Exactly. Terry stuff.
The cheeks are Terry. The mustache is Hulk.
I feel like the new wife probably, like, even though he is wearing his like probably like new Hulk merch, like he is just like being a little more like she's getting him Lululemon shorts.
You think he has like a new t-shirt that's so just like... like so streetwear and just his Hulkamania like small letters
yeah, like
in the
tiny,
middle of the...
So Mark Wahlberg is just like little Hulkamania.
Okay, how does she live? Is it just like machine like marble countertops, marble floors, like chandeliers? Like
chandeliers. He probably like is now that like he's not living in his crazy cribs 2005 ex-wife like chateau. I feel like he's like living a little calmer.
But I don't think he's like so new selling Sunset House. I think it's more like a, like 2008 construction.
2008 construction.
There's a lot of bonus rooms.
Tons of bonus rooms for like showers and like offices. And like, I'm sure he has like some YouTube rooms to do stuff in.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like he has a lot of like water toys.
Toys in the water.
Toys in the water. And so Sandy on.
Like for his indoor outdoor pool.
Yes, and he's like getting
and he
like,
definitely has like a huge like mosquito net cover like on the pool.
Florida style and like all those house hunters in Florida when they have those like glass covers.
But it's like more ugly than that.
And I think the bed is huge.
And it is. It's high in the sex tape. I'll tell you that. It's like a it's like a four poster and it's high.
Is he on top or is she on top?
Okay, if I remember correctly, I think like she's in the bed and he's standing, but then he's like on the bed. There's a bunch of different positions, but there's a lot of like walking around. But I do think the bed is like a fuck platform that is kind of up in the air a little bit.
It's 8 feet tall.
Who are you in the book?
I mean, are you Richard,
Richard Belzer?
Shay Hogan? And you're like, sorry.
Sorry, bitch.
I think I'm Linda Hogan. Making the chateau.
And you're so pissed when you find out about Shay
Hogan. Yeah, because it's like where you actually get the French house, then I make the Florida French house.
I can't wait to see it. All right. This
interesting.
Book, I give
as
this,
a song.
Yes, as a song. I love this song that I listened to.
Yeah. It was a play. I mean, look, for his mental capacity,
I think it was
he did a really
fun.
Good job. It was good, fun.
He shined. His personality shined.
His personality definitely shined. I think, you know, and he gave a lot of kind of insight into for as much as he could do, as much as I was expecting. I guess I was almost expecting less from him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess I give it kind of just a solid like 3 ripped Hulkamania tank tops.
Yeah, I would
5.
Say I give it a, in like a really friendly, nice, fun way, I give it a solid 2.6 camel clutches, which was the Iron Sheik's signature move, out of 5.
I'm gonna go camel clutch you.
Oh, behave. All right, best.
Celebrity Book Club of Stephen and Lily is produced by the one and only Darby Masters. Got that, brother? She was amazing. Met her in Tampa. She was a ringside girl for a while. Supervised produced by Abu Zafar, the Terminator. We had a match in 1991. I did the camel clutch on him. Then he flipped me over in the squirrel bite. Man, we need a rematch sound. All right. Executive produced by Christina Everett. She is the woman behind Vince McMahon, and man, you don't want to get on her bad side. She runs the Northeast region of wrestling. Theme song by Stephen Phillips, Horst. Artwork done by Teddy Blanks. And I'm like, what else do we have to do, credits? Oh, I'm sorry. This podcast was originally co-created and birthed in the Panama Canal with Prologue Projects.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.